This is episode 379 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, April the 9th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Today on the show, remember the Sony hack not so long ago? Well, a Lulzek hacker has pleaded guilty to the Sony breach. Twitter continues to grow at a record pace. The Facebook IPO, or the initial public offer, nears as NASDAQ gears up. Microsoft's Internet Explorer has several gaping holes that need patching. Over 500,000 Macs infected with the flashback Trojan. And parking inspectors are starting to use closed-circuit television to book people who overstay their park. Also tonight, Adam gives Telstra's new LTE network or 4G network a workout with a fistful of gadgets and a few hours to kill. And the results? Well, stay tuned. There's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week, so why not stick around for the next couple of hours and join the panel here on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. First up though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
Today on Tech Talk News, a Lulzek hacker pleads guilty to the Sony breach. Facebook is said to pick NASDAQ for its IPO. Apple investigates new iPad Wi-Fi issues and tells AppleCare to replace affected units. And Google held liable for misleading ads. This is Tech Talk News. Accused Lulzek hacker Cody Kretzinger pleaded guilty last week in the Federal Court of California to charges of taking part in an extensive computer breach of Sony Pictures Entertainment. In a deal with prosecutors, the 24-year-old pleaded guilty to one count each of conspiracy and unauthorized impairment of a protected computer system. Lulzek is an offshoot of the international hacking collective Anonymous and has taken credit for hacking attacks on government and private sector websites. Kretzinger testified that he gave the information he got from the Sony site to other members of Lulzek, who then posted it onto the group's website and onto Twitter. Kretzinger and other Lulzek hackers, including those known as Cebu and Topiary, stole the personal information of thousands of people after launching an SQL injection attack on the website. This ultimately cost Sony Pictures Entertainment over $600,000 in damages. The plea agreement is under seal, although Kretzinger would likely receive substantially less than a 15-year maximum sentence he faces. His sentencing is scheduled for July. Anonymous and its offshoots, including Lulzek and Antisec, focused initially on fighting attempts at internet regulation and the blocking of free illegal downloads, but have since taken on other targets, including the global banking system. Facebook will list on the NASDAQ stock market with its highly anticipated initial public offering. NASDAQ is the second largest stock exchange by market capitalization in the world, after the New York Stock Exchange. The social network will list its shares under the ticker symbol FB. It's a significant coup for the exchange, which has been embroiled in a battle with the New York Stock Exchange for the darlings of Silicon Valley. While big technology companies like Apple and Google have traditionally flocked to NASDAQ, the New York Exchange has aggressively courted the new crop of internet companies over the last year, grabbing notable offerings like LinkedIn and Pandora Media. With more than 800 million users and $3.7 billion in revenue, Facebook has come to dominate the social media industry. The company is widely expected to go public next month and is on track to be the largest offering since Google's debut in 2004. People familiar with the matter said that the IPO could value the sprawling social network company as high as $100 billion, putting it on par with some of the world's largest corporations like McDonald's and Citigroup. According to an internal AppleCare document, Apple is actively investigating a series of Wi-Fi-related issues affecting the third-generation iPad. Since the new iPad's launch, many users have been complaining about third-party iPad Wi-Fi issues, ranging from connection drops, slow downloads and upload speeds, or the device's inability to even pick up local Wi-Fi networks. Apple has taken notice and has admitted internally to some new iPad models having the Wi-Fi issues described in numerous reports and on forum threads. The company says symptoms can include but are not limited to intermittent connectivity, slow Wi-Fi speeds, and Wi-Fi networks not being seen. Apple tells AppleCare employees to ensure the devices they test are not facing these issues due to normal software bugs, but instead because of actual hardware components. Wi-Fi-only third-generation iPads are the only devices affected by these issues, according to Apple. The 4G LTE models are presumably safe from these issues due to the extra network power allowed by the black rubber cut on the top of the unit. Affected devices will be immediately packed and shipped to Apple's engineering centres for examination and investigation. Apple employees are instructed to capture the iPad itself and include accessories and replace the affected units. Back in Australia, the full bench of the federal court has held Google liable for misleading advertisements published on its AdWords service, overturning a September decision that cleared the search giant of wrongdoing. Chief Justice Patrick Keane, Justice Peter Jacobson and Justice Bruce Lander ordered Google to pay the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission's appeal costs and potentially costs from the original hearings last year. As part of the ruling, Google was also ordered to establish a compliance program to ensure advertisers complied with Australian consumer law. The program would require the training of company officers and employees, as well as a complaints handling system and regular reporting to the ACCC. The judgment pertains specifically to advertisements for Harvey World Travel, Honda, Alpha Dog Training and Just 4x4's magazine. Each of the advertisements had been uploaded by different account holders for Google's AdWords service, which embeds sponsored links to members' sites and advertising campaigns on its own search engine and other websites which implement the service. Google expressed disappointment with the ruling, saying that they shouldn't be responsible for the content of four particular ads on its platform and are reviewing their options. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
It was the rocking from side to side on the train.
Yes, that's what it is.
Sure. That was very, very, very cruel of them to do that to us.
Oh, okay. Someone's one up to you. Is that the problem?
There are others who are more deserving, but I now know.
But not your friends.
No, not my friends.
Rock Band the Board Game was announced.
My internet access is now a lot worse than it was in my old house.
The Dick Smith Facebook page is absolutely teeming with furious people.
Obviously, RIM's battling the dominance of Apple's iPhones and iPads and the onslaught of the Android-powered devices in the smartphone market.
And I didn't know that RIM stood for Research in Motion till just now.
It may not upset you technically, but it may upset you socially.
Oh, I thought we had quality journalism in Victoria, but up here, anything goes.
They're pretty good at making sure nothing bad gets through.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Nice to have you all with us here on this extended holiday weekend. Hopefully, if you're listening to us live on the radio or on the stream, you'll know what I mean. If you're listening to us at the other end of the week, that was last weekend. But anyway, Graham, how are you? How's your Easter?
Good, Andrew. Easter was quiet, which was nice.
Yeah, good, good. You hatch a few eggs.
A couple of eggs, yeah, big chocolate bunny, yeah. Went well.
Yeah, we had a few of them. They were running rampant out in the backyard.
Really?
Kids thought it was fantastic.
Chocolate
though,
so. Bunnies on the loose everywhere.
Yeah, speaking of chocolate bunnies, we got a few. The big ones with little white tails on them.
Oh, right.
They're really cool. Really, really
sounds
cool.
Sounds like it.
The kids thought they were great. They got Smarties inside them and all that.
Oh,
hey,
oh very
joys
good.
Of Easter. Lena.
Hi.
You've taken the scarf off.
I have.
She came in this evening nursing her football scarf in sub...
It's cold outside.
Sub degrees
out
there.
It is really freezing out there today.
Bit nippy.
It's normally balmy in the studios. So.
Yeah. We've lost our daylight savings. It's dark when we get here in the studios now. That's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it? Anyway, wherever you might... There might be daylight out there where you're listening to us on one of the great radio stations around the planet.
Yep.
So, yes. Anyway, you can come and join us on our chat, little forum thing. You don't have to register or anything. Just come along, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
everyone's welcome. And feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is also a place where you can communicate with us. Dr. Ron is allegedly on a railway platform in Melbourne. I think he's
looking
back.
Looking for his bags.
He's home.
Yeah, yeah. Yay. After his sojourn north, he's been playing trains for the last couple of weeks, so he's back in town now, which is good. So I don't know. He might join us this evening in one fashion or another. Maybe not. If not, the following week. So, yeah.
Hello, Dr. Ron, if you're listening out there.
So what's news this week, Graham? Anything grab you, or have you had a weekend of free of technology?
Nothing really exciting, no, for technology this week for me.
Lena will be proud of me.
What did you do?
Because it was so awful today at home, I stoked up the PS3.
Yay!
And I put in a game which I dare not normally put in because of what subsequently happens, which is Gran Turismo 5. It's
whenever I put that in, it wants to download, you know, multiple gigabyte updates.
And that's the same with me, but today it didn't. So I thought, oh, you beauty, I can have a game for a while. So I played it for an hour or two. Because normally when you put it in, it has to do its updates and you lose interest in it.
Yeah,
and
by the time it's done its updates, you have to find something else to do because you can't use Play TV or watch anything else on it either. So
no,
you can't watch a Blu-ray while it's doing it. Nah, so yeah, you have to go away and find something completely different to do if that happens.
Yeah, so it's been a bit of one of those video games sort of day. So I'm in your camp today, Lena, which is good.
Woo.
My father-in-law came over on the weekend. He's changing allegiances. He used to think you were really good, Graham. Now he's moved across to Lena.
Aha!
Actually, he said
victory
both.
You're stealing my fans.
Victory is mine.
Yeah. He listens to the show on the podcast every other day.
I have a fan.
Yeah.
Yay! One.
So we had a few family truths came out at our last Easter meeting, which is good.
I'm sorry to hear that. Oh, no, okay.
Well, I don't know. It's a technologically related thing, and you shouldn't text and drive, and my wife found out that firsthand during the course of the week.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a tyre.
I hope.
There's a tyre which is not looking too flash.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope no one was hurt. That's the important thing.
Oh, no one was hurt. It was a bit of an ego dint along the way. And
pulled a heartstring.
Yeah, she's now a member of an automobile club because she couldn't change a tyre. but anyway, that's another story.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's really it.
Do not text and drive.
No.
Do not read your emails and drive.
No,
that's basic stuff, people.
It's amazing
seriously
how many people do it, though, Graham.
I know.
You drive
what
around the street.
What's wrong with people?
Now, I drive a four-wheel drive, so I look down on a lot of people.
Yes.
And you can see what they're doing in their
laps. I know you look down on a lot of people,
Andrew. You like to look down on a lot of people.
Why do you say that with such a condescending tone in your voice?
Because I got a chance to.
Oh. Anyway,
can't believe that.
But you sort of see them. They all hide their devices underneath the eye line of the passenger windows.
Yeah.
So they've got them on their laps.
Yeah.
Both boys and girls do it.
Just put it in a car kit.
Yeah. It's a bit hard.
Mine in a car kit.
Yeah.
But you still shouldn't text and drive.
No.
No.
Even when it's in a car kit.
No, but you can do it at the lights and you don't get in trouble then. Can do it at the lights.
I've been doing a lot of texting lately, actually, considering because Dr. Ron's been away and you sort of send a text out and it sort of sits in the parking bay of texts until he comes into service area and then it delivers it to him. And, it's very hard to text without using one of those hands-free kits. Like, they do a reasonably good job.
Yeah, because your finger's way out in the middle of nowhere there. Yeah, it's not the easiest typing experience, is it?
So
but then I hate using the keyboard on my phone anyway, even on a good day. So
yeah.
I'm happy. I have learned in my 21st century way to communicate via a proper keyboard.
Yeah.
So I can happily IM with somebody for hours on end communicating through a normal keyboard. But when I'm asked to chat on a phone or a portable device, something like that, it's too much for me. It's just not. It just won't work for me.
Mm.
It's too hard to get the thought translated from brain to the medium.
Yeah. I've tried using the voice to text stuff. Works reasonably well. then sometimes it doesn't. It'll end up on damnyouautocorrect.com.
Yes.
And I think we've all been guilty of that. I've sent a couple of texts during the course of the week to people, and you look down after you've sent them and go, oh, my God, I didn't send that, did I?
I had that experience today.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh dear.
Proofread, kids.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that hard.
Yeah.
But is that the writer in me coming out? I copy edit all my own stuff.
Well, maybe. Maybe. So, that's pretty much all the gossip for this week. It's been a bit of a long weekend. I've been down the beach. It's been great. It's been really good. I've been catching up on a lot of stuff. Some new things in this evening too, which we'll talk about on the show. Things to do with chocolate.
Yay!
Yeah. And
speaking of.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a bunch of Easter eggs on the table here, so get into them and do all that sort of stuff. Oh, dear. She's doing Foley again.
That was Lena eating all the Easter eggs, people.
That was my best sound effect yet.
Yeah, it was pretty good, actually. It's pretty good. All right. Yeah, but first up, we'll kick off with a bit of this.
Your Say on Tech Talk Radio.
Indeed, it is Your Say on Tech Talk Radio. We had a few emails during the course of the week. People sent stuff across. Mm-hmm. One we had from a lovely gentleman called Rob. Rob sent, "Hi, team."
Sup, Rob?
Actually, he said, "Hey, team." Just a note to say thank you for letting us know about Ninite.com a few weeks ago. Question mark. I had to rebuild a machine this week after a nasty virus and remembered Ninite, and it's brilliant. Now, if you remember Ninite... Gee whiz, that went down quick. Did you see that, Graham?
Like no, I missed it completely. What happened? There.
They're really yummy.
An Easter egg met its maker. Oh. And you shouldn't talk on the radio with your mouth full.
What's Ninite dot whatever?
Ninite.com is a website of the week we had not so long back, which lets you build a little package for your computer, your nice, freshly installed computer, with all the great things, such as web browsers, file-moving utilities, antivirus programs, all of those sort of things. And it's one simple little program that you go tick all the boxes and go, yeah, that's what I want. And it downloads, and then you just sit back, relax, and it does it all for you. And I must admit, I've been using it quite regularly for building machines up, you know, because I want all three web browsers on there, and I want to...
You want a couple of little utilities, and you want Java,
programs
and you want
and codecs for watching movies and stuff. It's got QuickTime, all the popular stuff, and it just makes installing a new computer an absolute breeze. So there you go, Ninite.com, which was good, and Rob was using it during the course of the week. So
it's good. I'm glad that someone
have you
got
used
some
it. Have you been to it?
No, I haven't. I'm one of these people that likes to do things for themselves the hard way.
Oh, really? You like
I'm
installing?
Definitely not
I'm
that.
Also a bit minimalist. I'd like to only install what I really need.
Well, you'd like Ninite then, because it is very minimalist. It doesn't even want human intervention when it installs things. It doesn't put
I don't like machines to think they know what I want better than I do.
No, but it promises you what it gives you, which is toolbarless installs and human interventionless installs as well. Which is all very good.
I can see the value in it in some situations, but for me, I mean, install Windows, the antivirus client, Chrome, Java, and Flash.
Yeah.
And
well, they're all there. You just click the button, and it does it in one fell swoop.
Okay.
It even puts your Windows Essentials on and all that sort of stuff if you're a Windows user.
Okay.
And it's all unattended sort of stuff. And the good thing about it is you can run the same download package a couple of weeks, months, years later, and it will go through and check everything's there and do updates for you.
Oh, okay. And it'll make sure you always get the latest version. Yeah. Okay. So, well, there's probably value in that.
Handy little utility. Great site, Ninite.com. So there you go, Rob. Thanks for sending your feedback, Rob, in on that one. Jeff Dudley, who is a regular contributor to the program.
Hello, Jeff.
Sent an email which had a lot of stars in the beginning of it, warning in capital letters, rant coming. And
uh-oh,
then lots more stars on the end of it.
Brace thyself.
First, the good news. Someone has told me that iPads have Bluetooth capability. One can easily use Bluetooth keyboards, for example.
Yep.
Which you do, don't you, Lena?
I do.
And you successfully?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Now for the bad news. Apparently, you can't use other devices which make use of serial ports, like serial to Bluetooth adapters or USB to serial adapters. That's a bit of a...
So it has Bluetooth, but it doesn't have every single Bluetooth profile in the known universe.
I suspect not.
Which a lot of devices don't.
Jeff then goes on to say, surely Apple can get its act together to allow Bluetooth to talk to all devices. All devices being in capital letters.
Surely you can understand why they would not want it to be connected to a USB, though.
Surely you can't be serious.
Surely you can't be serious.
Don't call me Shirley.
What, like, you've got to understand why they wouldn't want it to be able to be connected with USB devices.
Well...
Really, it's not that much of a stretch.
Yes, you can. Anyway, I have an application, as in Jeff has an application, which will work for the Android or iPad, which can use either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi ad hoc. The Bluetooth option requires an adapter, which costs $30, and the Wi-Fi adapter costs $160, over five times as much to do the same thing. This could be a lucrative job for Warlock. Warlock is a member of our chat community. He's probably over there. Warlock, is this a gauntlet? Anyway, getting iDevices to talk to Bluetooth serial adapters. Also, while on the topic...
I'm really curious as to what the final application is. What is it he's actually trying to achieve?
I don't know. No. Maybe he could elaborate on that. He's obviously trying to sneak something into the iPad via a something
serial over Bluetooth. I'm a bit of I'd like to know what the final application is, because there's probably a better way to do it.
Yeah. Well, let us know, GD. He finishes off, while on the topic, my Android Galaxy S won't support peer-to-peer network, but at least its Bluetooth works for everything I've thrown at it so far. And if I want to use a peer-to-peer, all I have to do is to root it. Has anyone rooted an iPad? Of course not. They've probably jailbroken them.
Yeah, you can root iPads.
Yeah, I've never done it.
You can jailbreak iPads.
Jailbreak. Yeah. What's the same thing?
Yeah, it is. It is the same. It's the same concept. Yes.
So I must admit, I've never tried to. I've certainly jailbroken an iPhone, just because it was a challenge, and it worked well, and it all did it for me. But I've never bothered doing. I've got an iPad, the first iPad that was bought. And it's still going like a trooper. There's more games on it than my kids can actually possibly play in a whole year, I reckon. Yeah. But, yeah, anyway, he goes on to say, why can't manufacturers agree on standards these days? End of rant. Thank you, GD. Good points. But, yes, I suspect there's some valid reasons why the big Apple monolith doesn't want to have us all plugging all sorts of different layers into their computers.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense.
And another one here. This is from Lewis. Also known as Newbie. Is he in the chat tonight? He's been there from time to time. Lewis sent us an email during the course of the week. Hi, Tech Talkers.
Hi, Lewis.
Happy Easter, although it might be a bit late. No, you're still right. We've still got the eggs on the table. We'll probably have them here next week.
Probably. They'll be on special, so they'll be here for a few weeks.
Well, actually, yeah, I was up at the local supermarket the other day, and I just grabbed a few on the way past because they were 2-for-1, which is half price, because you can't resist those, can you? No. Just goes to show the margin that they have on chocolate around Easter, doesn't it? The big major manufacturers, aren't you? Yes. Anyway, Lewis said, I was cleaning out the TV cabinet over the long weekend, pulled out 100 or so VHS tapes that were stuffed in the drawers. I've been here, done this.
I've got drawers like that, yeah.
Your VHS.
I've got boxes and boxes of them somewhere in storage.
Have you looked at them and go, my God, they're big?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
They make a very satisfying noise when you sort of bang them on the desk.
Have you actually still got a VHS player?
Oh,
either
yeah.
of you?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
I've got one somewhere. I thought I'd keep it so that in 20 years' time when I find that tape, or someone comes to me with that tape and says, do you
Absolutely.
Know what to do with this?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, yeah, I'll see if the rubber bands haven't broken in the drive on the VHS machine, and we'll see if it plays. So, but yeah, I have one of those. Anyway, back to Lewis's letter. Yeah, his drawers were obviously busting with these things. The best way to digitize the tapes... That's what he's looking for. Should I use one of those VCR-DVD recorder combos, or should I use one of those VCR out to computer in gadgets? Has anyone on the panel converted VHS to DVD, MPEG-4, any other format you can read on the computer? Yeah, I have.
Yeah, actually, those cheap ones you get on eBay, the...
little $20 dongles.
Yeah, that have they usually have S-video or composite video and two channels of audio, and they plug into a USB port. They actually work, surprisingly enough. You probably want to do a bit of hunting around to find some software to do the capture with. Don't use the capture software you get with that. So hunt around on the internet for some good software to capture it.
You'll find that your DVD programs traditionally have capture software. Not
sometimes
the players.
Ones like Nero. They've bloated into that sort of territory.
Yes.
There's a few ways to skin that particular cat. And there's a few sites around on the internet that will help you with the best way to capture and do some rough editing. You probably don't want to do serious editing. You probably just want to do, top and tail it, find the right in and out points to make a separate file for each program and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
Maybe take the ads out if you've got an old TV program that you need to keep. If it's family videos, you probably just want to take, big slabs of it.
Yep.
So, there are websites out there to help, video help sort of websites that will tell you how to capture, how to do rough editing, how to convert it to a DVD and out and burn it. It can all be done with free or open source or trialware type software. Or if you want to get more serious, you can. There's some professional software that can. Turn you into a really good video editor too. So it depends on what level you're looking at. If you're looking on the Mac, of course, you've got some really good options there with is it Final Cut or what is it for
Or iMovie.
Yeah,
it's more the domestic one. Yeah,
iMovie's the domestic one. Yep.
And
with Windows. Once you've got it captured for editing in Windows, you've got Windows Movie Maker, which is usable. If you know, it might not be a great editing tool, but it's usable. It'll get the job done for you.
My father-in-law used Windows Media Player to transfer all their 8mm family home videos onto DVD.
Chances are it'll capture two then, won't it? Maybe the Movie Maker software that comes with...
With 8mm film, there's a couple of challenges there. Mm. One is that a lot of them are shot at 16 frames per second instead of at... usually the choices with 8mm film was 16 and 24 frames, and almost everybody shot that stuff at 16 frames.
Because they got more.
Yeah, and the trick to capturing that is to get a good projector and tweak the speed so it runs at 25 frames... Then capture it to video at 25 frames, and then use a good video editing software to slow it down again to the correct speed.
Oh, he's
and
in
that
the
will,
chat.
That will work a lot better if you're capturing 8mm film or 16mm film.
Oh, good. He's in the chat. He said it's got Windows, so he'll give Windows Movie Maker a go.
Okay. Yep. Use some basic capture software. I'm trying to think of what it is. There's several of them. Some basic sorts of programs that
and
will capture
it. And free ones out there too.
And free ones. Yep. Even something like Virtual Dub will do capture for you.
Yeah.
And then edit it in Movie Maker and output it to DVD. I think you'll have a real success story there if you just stick with the basics.
Don't overcomplicate things.
That's right, yeah.
Trips you up if you do that. I must admit...
And so, put up videohelp.com seems super helpful. Yeah, that's exactly the sort of site I'm thinking about, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, to go to optical or to go to a file-based system, I must admit, I think optical's great if you want to put it on the shelf and not use it for some time, but it's not really user-friendly if you want to actually edit it because it's a... MPEG streams traditionally don't edit that well. You want things like QuickTime streams.
Everything's
going to
be
like
a
that.
Packetized stream, though. It's always going to be that sort of compression, though.
Yeah. But the optical stuff's just a pain to get back into your computer because you get VOB files and you've got to transcode it and do all sorts of
nonsense.
Stuff like that.
VOB files are just MPEG 2 files. There's nothing to them.
Yeah, well, yes. But traditionally...
Which one of you edits video for a living again?
Yeah, exactly. So I'd probably rather ditch the optical side of things and go more the file-based system because
it depends on depends on the purpose.
Can't get a word in edgeways.
I'm sorry, Andrew, but
the reason
there's horses for courses. There's
no, you're
valid
right.
Reasons for both formats.
There is, and the reason why I say go to file-based stuff is because we have a file server at home where we keep all of our movies.
Yeah, now, and for people who've got that, who've got a NAS sitting in the corner on their network, then that's a great way to go.
And it can also be your local computer on your desktop or anything like that, because
it all
shares in under the new software arrangements.
And if what you want is to be able to give a copy to your tech-savvy friends who are going to play it on their laptops, give it to them on a USB stick, or if you want to upload it to YouTube so that the family overseas can see it, or if you're going to go down any of those tracks, then Andrew's absolutely on the money. But if you want to give it to grandma to look at, or if you want to give it to your aunts and uncles who...
Hang on a minute, I give it to my mum, she's a grandma, and she gets it on a USB stick. What are you inferring, Graham?
Let me rephrase that. If you're going to be dealing with your less tech-savvy family members, then they might find that burning it to a DVD make it easy to make copies of it, easy for them to play, they just stick it in their DVD player... Then that is often the way to go.
Correct. The reason why I was saying to go...
It's also good because people will tend to put them on their... If you give it to them as a DVD, they'll tend to stick it on their shelves and keep it and think they'll watch it from time to time, even if they don't. And if you then lose your copy, then they've got a copy sitting on their shelf.
Correct. The benefit I found going to a file-based system is you can actually get a truckload of home movies on a... 100 gig, even a terabyte or a 2 terabyte drive in a machine. And the benefit of that is that if you're got one of those media players at home, you have the whole library there. Like we've got, and the kids love it because the kids don't put DVDs in. They don't do that because they're not that way inclined. They just want to jump online and go, I want to see the trip we did at Sorrento on the weekend. They go there and hit play and they sit back and have a good laugh. And then they can show their friends that as well.
Yeah.
And I find that that's really quite an interesting way of doing it. So there you go. Options.
If you're all set up for that option, then yeah, that's great. But yeah, not everybody is.
Yeah. But horses for courses. Choose which one works best for you, I'd say. Well, that was long-winded. Newbie, he's on the chat. What's VCD? Oh, don't go there.
Warlock. Well, that's in response to Warlock, who said you can even make VCD. Video CD is a format that uses the DVD encoding but saves it on a CD disc. Was very rare in Australia. Was very popular in Asia for some things, for some movies and things on CD. This is before DVD ROMs and when CD ROMs and CD writers were more popular than DVD ROMs and DVD writers were. These days, I don't think there's much use for that format, to be honest.
Sorry, I was just chatting on the chat there. Yes, absolutely right. Sorry, I'll just finish that comment. So you should come on to the chat because we're chatting there. There's two shows running here at the moment, which is all good. All right, so yeah, that's all our correspondence for the week. But that's a really good question, Nubi, about how to get your home movies, the old VHS tapes, because I've got a few of them. They contain, you know, great family memories of old, you know, anything from old pets to old birthdays and
absolutely.
You know, special
Everybody's
occasions.
Got those sorts of things, yeah.
And I must admit, because I grew up in the television industry, I tend to have a few extra VHS tapes of things that I've made along the way, just a souvenir, a few TV programs and stuff like that. And they're not all available out there to get on the internet. So, yeah, they are precious memories.
And because, of course, you made them in the 80s when the Ampex tape formulation wasn't what it ought to have been, you can't go back to the masters anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's funny you should mention it, actually. I do have a few in the hall cupboard at home of some of my the more prouder moments in my television career. I have 1-inch tape.
Oh, yeah.
Which
from that era.
From that era. The C format 1-inch machines. Which, let's not dwell on the past here, but these were big industrial television. That's what this used to be in the TV stations. And it was sort of the last hurrah of analog broadcast format. It was a 1-inch tape. It was the best quality you could sort of get.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the last sort of hurrah before we started to move into the digital Betacam type formats and things like that. So, and that's a 1/2-inch tape format. But yeah, there you go. Bit of history in television.
Yeah, and what I'm referring to is that Ampex had an issue with their Ampex were the gold standard in tape quality tape. They were the manufacturer you went to for your master tapes, and they had an issue with the formulation of the tape, and over time, when it was sitting in the cupboard, the glue would start to ooze out of it and become sticky. Sticky tape syndrome.
Yeah, and that was never very good for video heads, was it?
Well, it's no good for audio either. I've got a cupboard full of audio tapes from that era that are very precious to me that are unplayable as well for the same reason. You know, it oozes this goo out of it, and it sticks to the tape path through the player, and yeah, won't play.
Oh well, there you go, videotape, audio tape,
yeah,
Ampex, Sony, the whole shooting match. But yeah, change your VHS tapes across and get them onto something that you can use and future-proof them for down the track for future generations.
Yeah, and two, is it Lewis Newby? When you do embark on this project, I'd be very curious to hear how you go and for you to let us know what programs you found that did work and so on for you.
Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, a bit of a holiday edition this evening. Dr. Ron will be joining us maybe later, maybe next week, or definitely next week, having done his sojourn away. Lena's in this evening. She's currently unlocking her iPad. That's a very easy password.
Yeah, it was. That's just there to fool a 3-year-old, not anyone else.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I just saw you go tap, 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 tap. I thought, oh, okay, very good. Graham's in this evening, obviously, and I'm Andrew McComb. We're going to take a break, eat a few more Easter eggs, and we'll come back after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Things happened during the week. Not that we had a long week, because we had Friday off.
We had Monday off.
And Monday off.
Not that my customers took any notice. They were texting me today.
Really? Oh, it's been really quiet. I don't know about you guys. Just emails stopped. Everything just stopped over the long weekend and school holidays to go with it as well. Anyway, news this week. We touched on it briefly in the news. Lulzek, the hacker, has pleaded guilty for the Sony breach.
Oh.
The people that got in there and did nasty things. Speaking of Sony, Sorry, this is how to digress a news story. Sony's going to lay off a lot of people in Japan. I was reading this tonight on the BBC website that they're looking at laying off incredible amounts of staff in the order of thousands because of the fact that their business is obviously slowing. What are you doing over there? I hear all sorts
he's
of noises.
Sorry, phone around.
My phone. I tried to stand my phone up nice and neatly, and
it didn't work.
Backfired at me and fell over and made a noise. Then Lita laughed and
Because everyone probably heard these big thumps and bangs and crashes and wondering what on earth it was. Anyway, Sony are going to put off a lot of people, which is a sign of the times, I think. That's Sony Japan.
They like doing that at the moment.
Yeah, well, I don't know. They made a lot of equipment that probably not too many people are buying at the moment. So their television sets probably it. And the broadcast industry is probably not buying too much at the moment either because things are changing rapidly in that industry as well. Mm. So I don't think I'm
not shooting on your Sony cameras anymore. You're all shooting on your Canon stills cameras.
Yeah, that's one part of the equation that's certainly there.
So, that's got to hurt.
The little Canons are doing well. Well, it's funny. Sony have actually released cameras trying to target that market. You know, the F3 camera recently was one of those, you know, $20,000 cameras.
Yeah,
it's still pricey for what it is.
Yeah, but cinematographers and photographers, they're not going to change brands just because Sony brings out a new camera. If they're in love with their Canons, they're going to stick with their Canons.
They will.
Because they've bought all the lenses and stuff for them.
Yeah. Yeah, but
not only that. I mean, just because if they've had success with a Canon, where are they going to be looking first when they want to buy a new camera? They're going to look for something that's similar as possible to what they've had the most success with.
Well, that's correct. And you look at what Canon's doing now in cameras. The C300 is their motion picture variety of cameras. And guess what? All your lenses swap beautifully from your DSLR
from your DSLR
over your feature film camera. Good thinking, Canon.
Absolutely.
and there's a lot of there's some good examples on Vimeo, one of the web hosting sites which hosts video of what these cameras can look like and do. And I dare anyone to pick some of these great digital formats over the old traditional formats. So,
you wouldn't know if it's been shot on a digital SLR or if it's been shot on a really fancy Sony television camera of some kind. You might know the very fancy, really nice looking picture might probably came off a Canon DSLR.
Yeah,
well, episodes of House were shot on a DSLR.
Yeah,
Canon.
Absolutely. Yeah,
I was shooting on one whilst on holidays because I figured now's the time to get a feel for them and just get used to it.
Yeah,
and the quality of the imagery off that thing is just stunning. Also for the fact it sees in the dark.
Right.
I shot the ferry coming in from Queenscliff to Sorrento.
Oh, yeah.
I was on the end of the pier. I could hardly see it with my eyes. Like, it was just a white blob with black, because it was so dark. The sun had set.
Right.
And yet this camera just pulled it out of the darkness. I mean, a little bit. Sure, it was a bit noisy because I had the ASA cranked up quite a bit. But nonetheless, it could see it.
Mm.
And I thought that was very impressive for a camera of that sort of caliber. Anyway, we digress. Chocolate printers to go on sale after Easter.
Chocolate
printers.
Hang on. It prints chocolate or the printer's made out of chocolate?
It prints chocolate.
I want one.
Do you?
I want one that prints money.
Well, let's not talk about that on the radio just at the moment.
Real legit money.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This I saw, because this was Easter and all that sort of stuff, the BBC had on their website, because I was snooping around there before I came in, the UK scientist who has developed a prototype chocolate printer say that they've now perfected it. Now, they've got a photo on the website. If you have a look
at
the BBC
site. I think we did a story on Tech Talk Radio about the prototype many years ago.
Did we?
Does this mean we're one step closer to lickable wallpaper?
I don't like that.
Willy Wonka?
From Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. Yes, no, I think no. That's just really disgusting idea, don't you think?
Yes, goes
but
on
the
with
snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Look, it's like Oompa Loompas. Yeah, but you don't trust them either.
Who wants wallpaper that people have licked?
Well, you just avoid the head height level. And go super high up on the ladder and you're fine. Or super low.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Chocolate printing.
Sorry, I was just reading Phoenix and they said, Phoenix K in the chat said, like a chocolate kettle. No, I don't think that could quite work. Anyway, this device is a flatbed printer. And what it does is it lets you print things in chocolate. It's got a little print head on it, which has a syringe above it full of chocolate. Ooh. And it prints it out onto your device, onto your little non-stick arrangement, and you can then scoop it off and put on your cake or anything else that you might choose to do.
You could print money that's made out of chocolate.
You could. Well, you could load up your favourite happy birthday font.
You could put your own face on a chocolate coin.
You could.
Whoa.
Whoa, now there's a thought, isn't it? Anyway,
that's pretty cool.
They hope to have the machine on sale by the end of April. Unfortunately, they've just missed the Easter rush. I don't think that's going to be a problem. This thing will win hands down if they can get it to work. It would also allow chocolate lovers to print their own custom-made sweets layer by layer.
Yay.
It's mind boggles, really, doesn't it?
It does. Mm. The things you could do with it.
Yeah, and then if you think about it, it's printing a solution. What else could you put into it? You know, you could put in the things that they make, you know, sugar bears out of.
Fondant.
What?
Fondant.
Yes, fondant. Mm.
That's the stuff inside cream eggs.
Yeah? Mmm. You could otherwise have a lot of fun with that, heaven. Couldn't you?
You could.
So, yeah, things you can do with chocolate printers, I guess. Now, the other interesting news, unless anyone has anything else they'd like to table about chocolate printers.
No.
No, we've done all the jokes yet. Vista, that operating system that Microsoft sort of doesn't know anything about.
Yeah.
Their product life cycle has kicked in for Vista now, would you believe? I was having a bit of a snoop around there today. And as of the 10th of April, which is around about now, depending upon when you're listening to us, mainstream support has now ended for Windows Vista, Starter, Windows Vista Ultimate, Windows Vista Ultimate 64-bit Edition. And then we're into the extended support part, whatever extended support. What does extended support mean? If support's finished, extended support.
If I remember correctly, I think that they'll do security fixes but not general bug fixes,
yeah.
I think, something like that.
Yeah, so the product's gone end of life and they're just maintaining it for those people that are, all three of them that still have it loaded up on a machine somewhere. Do you know any, in your professional working days, Graham, do you know anyone who is running that particular operating system?
Running Vista? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we all skipped that one and just held on to XP.
Yeah, I think those...
They rolled back. Remember they rolled back to... You could have an upgrade to XP off Vista.
Some
they
people
called it
did,
a
yeah.
downgrade.
Someone on the chat, just to go back quickly to the chocolate printer, has put a link to a YouTube video of a coffee printer.
Oh, really?
And it's not putting coffee onto paper. It's you put your cup of coffee underneath it and it does something on the foam.
Oh, is this for baristas, is it?
Yeah.
So you can.
Yeah, but it was a skill of the people who made your coffee that they could do patterns without needing a fancy printer to do it.
But this is a photo of Halle Berry on your coffee.
Oh, who needs that?
It's a berry latte.
There's a lot of jokes here, but I'm not going to touch any of them.
No.
So, a berry latte.
Wow. That's pretty cool. The printer can even put words and stuff on them.
Great marketing ploy. Cool. Open up your coffee and it says, we're having a price rise in our coffees. It'll be 50 cents extra next week or something.
Yeah.
Because they bought a printer to print on their coffee.
Put in YouTube coffee printer. A few cool things come up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's rad.
Yeah. While we're talking about Microsoft, there's some gaping holes, apparently, in Internet Explorer at the moment, and they're about to update the browser. So if you've got, Patch Tuesday coming up fairly shortly, you might get a few updates. But Microsoft plans to ship a high-priority Internet Explorer update to fix the stuff in their web browser. The security holes in Internet Explorer could be exploited remotely by malicious hackers. And I think we've discussed before that the web browser is the weakest link between you and a hacker out there. So it's pretty important to get your patches and done on all your web browsers, regardless of format, because it would work on any machine, any device, any operating system. Just make sure your browsers are up to scratch. What else this week? Facebook e-commerce. Now, there's been a bit of talk about this. This is the next step for Facebook because the IPO is going to happen this month, which is the float, and that's going to be on NASDAQ.
Mm. Yes, how to turn Facebook into a proper money-making...
And they're guessing it's going to be worth truckloads. Absolute truckloads.
Mm.
What kind of thing would make Facebook stock go down, do you think, apart from hacks and that kind of thing?
I would think trying to make too much money out of it and having all the users bugger off to something else.
Yeah, but I mean like a news story or something. Like, because we hear a lot of things. Hey, Facebook's doing all this naughty stuff. Do you think then we'd see the stock go boing?
Look, I don't know whether... I guess we're in a market-sensitive area now with this. Yeah. And if you look at what Facebook do, they connect people. Now, the way that they connect people, not only through the Facebook app...
They connect people to advertisers, yes.
Correct. They connect people to but they also connect people through applications, like the things you download on your iPhones, your iGadgets, your anything, you know, any mobile device. And it's only... You're only going to be as good as what the weakest link is in that, aren't you, when you think about it? So if a rogue app comes out and does some strange and nasty things, like I think we've spoken about on this program, the sharing of data, albeit... accidental could be used for the wrong reasons. And
share prices could go down.
I don't think we've seen or thought of what that will be, Lena, when that situation you speak of happens. Everyone will go, oh, we didn't see that coming.
Could someone make a malicious app so that the stock price will go down and then buy a lot of stock and then watch it go back up again?
Exactly. But think of privacy. You know, we had we mentioned an app of the week the other week, which I showed to you, and you go, oh, I don't like this app.
Click.
Which was called Click.
With a K.
Now, we're doing a few tests with that during the course of the break. You know, you can sit in a restaurant with Click and you can point it at people walking past in the street and it says who they are.
I don't like that at all.
No, I don't like that at all.
Not at all. I think it should be illegal.
But if you think of where that can go, that's probably going to... And that uses the Facebook facial recognition software that we've seen. And if you think about that, imagine that in other areas. And there's also all sorts of other strange apps which could be married together. There's one I was reading about in the US, which is... and excuse me if I get this name wrong, but it's something like... There's an app called Girls Near Me or something like that, which I was reading about. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, that's scary.
And if you put that together with facial recognition stuff and the back end of that's Facebook, well, you know, I don't want to be gloom and doom here, but it doesn't take rocket science to put it together, does it?
So, no, very creepy.
Anyway, and e-commerce is something that we haven't seen with Facebook yet, and that may be the next big thing that's going to come. And obviously, there's some startups which are starting to do that. I don't know how that's going to work, and we'll probably start seeing all that after they do the float next... Is it this month or next month?
Mm.
Don't know whether it's April or May, but it's not far off, that's for sure. So,
it'd be interesting to see if they are a bit more wary of any breaches because they are a floated company. See if they change the way they manage their company because they're floated now.
Warlock's just put something in my chat, which I should look at this computer because I've got two on the desk, one on the left and one on the right. Warlock's put something in the chat. There was an app out recently and banned called Girls Around Me. Yes, that's the one I was talking about. I thought, yes. And would find any females on Facebook near you.
It found males too.
Did it?
Set it to find males as well, but it was called Girls Around Me.
Yeah.
But it was creepy.
Yeah, that's what I was reading about online, and I thought, if you think of all that sort of stuff, it's not good. Mm. Not good at all.
But presumably the people it's finding are people who have chosen to make their location public.
You would hope.
You'd think so.
Presumably.
But that's default on Facebook to have your location shared.
And that's what people need to be aware of when you use Facebook. If you use Facebook and you leave that default setting on the default setting, then what have you got to complain about? You'll be found.
If you go to our website, techtalkradio.com.au, down the very bottom right-hand corner, under a sign that says, Beware of the Tiger, there is a little thing there that says, click here and it'll tell you how to set your Facebook privacy settings. So just have a refer of that if you're wondering about how to set up Facebook, because it changes regularly, the privacy settings on these sort of organisations, and well worth a chat. Strike what you said there. I downloaded Girls Around Me before it got banned. It didn't work. As it called too many scams. Oh, yeah, okay, cool. So, yeah, there's a bit of conjecture in the chat about whether or not it worked well, but I think it was more US. I was reading articles about it in the US, and I think there's one out there for Foursquare now where, you know, you check in and do all that sort of stuff. So maybe that's the...
The creepy part was that it brought up a GPS map and then little avatar photos of all the girls
around. I saw that.
So you could sort of pick one and go find it, which is just disgusting.
Go find her.
Yes.
Not it.
No, but
we don't refer to people as it.
But the people using this app would.
Yeah, but we don't.
That's my point.
All right, moving along to other social networking things. Twitter has gone from strength to strength. It continues to grow at record pace. They now have 140 million active users and more than 340 million tweets each day. What type of server do you reckon? That's going to be a big server, hasn't it, Graham? Doing
I guess
all that
so.
Sort of stuff. As the research expands, more and more targets for spammers too. So, because I noticed, and I don't know whether you guys have, but I've noticed there's been quite a few interesting spams come in on the tweet. You know, the direct, not so much direct messaging, but...
Yeah, on the direct messaging, yes. Every time I tweet, I get a short burst of direct messages back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I never get direct messages for spam, ever. I get at replies, but never direct messages.
Yeah, I get at... Tech Talk Radio or something like that, and then a link, like a shortened link or something like that. You see a few of those that come in, but I've never had the true spam sort of thing, you know, click here for pills and Russian brides and all that.
Ads on in my stream too. I hate that.
What?
What well, there's, you can, a, there's an ad in my stream.
Oh, but
here.
You're using Twitter on the web app. No one does that. Everyone uses an app to view Twitter. So,
yeah.
How can you get DM spam messages if you're only following 5 people?
Well, that's a very valid point.
Because you, only get DMs from people who you are following.
Perhaps they are at replies.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah.
All right. My apologies. I don't use Twitter enough to understand the terminology.
Yeah, you need to be both following someone and they are following you to then
to get a direct
DM,
message.
Yeah,
okay.
DM conversation.
So, yeah, Twitter's growing. Spam is on the increase. So it's going to provide a bit of a challenge, I reckon, to the managers there in San Francisco about trying to keep a lid on spam because email spam was a scourge. And I must admit, I think, I don't know, what do you reckon, Graeme? Are you finding there's less email spam these days than there used to be? I must admit,
no.
I don't get much at all.
But yeah, because you've got your spam controls wound up so tight that even the people who know you can't email you.
Now, that's not true. It used to be true, but it's no longer true. I have my email spam filter is my ISP's spam filter.
Oh, okay.
Now. I don't use one locally or anything like that. I used to, but now I... And I'll stop kicking that thing under the bed.
That'd be good, yeah.
I now use my email web host's email system.
Okay.
And they have a very good spam filter. And I do hear from everybody...
Some of the commercial filters are getting very good, yeah. But, I mean, that's always an arms race. The spammers will catch up and then they'll...
Yeah, but I think
they'll win for a little while and then it'll go in cycles.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't seen any of those, you know, enlarging sort of emails for many moons now, which is good.
Yes, because they're a little bit...
Maybe I'm in the wrong demographic.
Our mailboxes are just getting smarter.
Maybe.
I think you're right.
Did you see that Cisco had issues with their commercial spam filtering product during the course of the week?
And they've said, too bad, so sad, resend your email if you want it to get through.
Well, there's nothing else they could do. Once it's bounced, it's bounced. But, apparently it was bouncing a lot of legitimate emails. So for emails bound for customers who use the commercial Cisco anti-spam products, a whole range of different commercial anti-spam products that Cisco provides. So it was bouncing a lot of legitimate emails, but they fixed the problem now, they say. And if you've had an email to probably mostly to large commercial organisations who would be using this sort of product...
Yeah.
And it's bounced for no obvious reason. Do make sure that you check for bounce messages when you send in emails too, by the way. Resend it because it may have been caught up in this problem that Cisco Networks had.
Yes. Yeah, I did read about that, but I don't think I had any issues in the past week or so.
No, I hadn't noticed any either, but then my customers use Juniper, so...
Oh, well, there you go.
Rather than Cisco, so...
The British... have a government department called the Home Office, the UK Home Office. Anyway, they've been subject to a denial of service attack, a DDoS attack from the those anonymous people, you know, anonymous.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So obviously someone's done something over there to upset them, but it's good to see anonymous is still alive and well despite the current legal proceedings with LulzSec and all that sort of stuff. So I thought probably worth a mention this evening.
You anarchist, you.
And really, and something else which was quite disturbing that I came across during the course of the week.
Disturbing.
Disturbing.
Andrew is disturbed, dear listener.
5 people have been arrested in southern China after a teenager sold his kidney so that he could buy an iPhone and iPad.
Yes, this is disturbing, yes.
Those detained include the surgeon who removed the kidney from the boy in April last year. The state-run Xinhua, if that's how you pronounce it, news agency, said that the group received around $35,000 for the transplant. So hopefully he got enough for his iPad and stuff out of it, but I suspect not. August harvesting for pecuniary interests is certainly got to be something which is...
Organ harvesting, yeah.
To be condoned, I would
not
have thought.
Not to be condoned, yes.
Oh, yes.
To be condemned, in fact.
Yeah, I'd go with that too. The student is said to be suffering renal failure, according to prosecutors. He's 17 years old and recruited for the illegal trade through an online chat room.
That's ridiculous.
That's very disturbing, as you say.
So, yes, beware of that, I guess. I don't
beware
know.
Of it.
If you're traveling to China, my parents...
You might get the urge to sell a kidney, is that what you're saying? Well, beware of it.
My family's over there at the moment.
So they might come over all giddy about their kidneys. No.
Yeah. No. All right.
Just don't sell kidneys. Don't sell organs.
No. It's be a donor, field. Though. Tick the box.
Yes.
Put on your driver's license.
Donate
it's well
them,
worth it.
But don't sell them.
Yeah,
yes.
Don't sell them. Mm. All right. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio, the sort of somewhat laid-back holiday edition thereof, Tech Talk. Our first incredibly cold night outside for us here, which is good. So we're all rugged up a little bit. It's time to eat some more Easter egg chocolates, which means it's time to have a bit of a listen to Adam Turner's View from the Couch. And this week, Adam grabbed hold of a couple of gadgets and took them out into the field to test out Telstra's new LTE network.
Oh, okay. Ah, I'll be interested in hearing this.
Now, to dispel some of the myths, he took a couple of gadgets, a couple of SIM cards, and went out there. Because apparently...
And one of them wasn't the new iPad.
No, it wouldn't... wouldn't have been a new iPad, no.
No.
No, because I don't think Telstra have anything on 2100 LTE. Sell it as,
despite the fact that they sell it as the 4G iPad, doesn't work on 4G networks, sold, not LTE networks.
Sold it as...
Not in this country. Not in other countries.
It still says 4G iPad if you go buy one.
And I think it only works on 4G in the United States.
The ACCC made them change it.
They did, but I don't know whether they've updated their website. I think that's Graham's point. He's looking now. Are you? Is there?
Yes. We'll report back after the view.
Oh, yeah, you're going to report back? Oh, apparently it's snowing in Jindabyne, according to Mountain Wombat. That's on our chat at the moment. So if you've got yourself a 4G LTE device, join us on our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, yeah. And let us know a little bit of feedback for after Adam's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
After roaming the suburbs with a couple of LTE-enabled gadgets, I can tell you that Telstra's new mobile network is blindingly fast. Yet the performance is still hit and miss. Right now, Telstra offers the only commercially available LTE network in Australia, which runs at 1800 MHz. That's bad news for iPad 3 owners, as the new Wonder tablet only supports LTE at 700 and 2100 MHz. All is not lost because Optus might use these frequencies and Vodafone is also trialling an LTE and both of them expect to launch something later this year. But for the moment, Telstra is the only telco delivering LTE goodness with theoretical speeds of 100 megabits per second. Now, we all know that theoretical speeds are a joke, but Telstra promises typical download speeds ranging from 2 to 40 megabits per second, which sounds more realistic. Apart from Telstra's dual-mode USB dongle, the only gadgets on sale in Australia at the moment which support Telstra's LTE network are three Android devices: HTC's Velocity 4G smartphone, Samsung's Galaxy S2 4G smartphone, and Samsung's Galaxy Tab 8.9 4G tablet. Recently, I've taken the Velocity 4G smartphone and Galaxy Tab 8.9 4G tablet for a spin around the suburbs, and the results were pretty impressive. Now, the first thing you notice about LTE speeds is that the Telstra coverage maps are rather generous. Generally, I've found that all network coverage maps are a work of fiction, and here's no exception. Telstra initially said the LTE footprint would extend around 5 kilometres from the centre of the major cities, but it's closer to 10 kilometres in Melbourne and Sydney, according to the coverage maps. Yet the maps can be deceptive. In some places, I was at least a kilometre within the LTE coverage area, but the indicators on the devices still kept flickering back from 4G to H and 3G. The second thing you'll notice about LTE is that speeds are far from consistent. I saw a lot of variation between what I could get on the Samsung tablet and what I could get on the HTC phone, with the tablet generally coming out a long way ahead. I was using the same SIM cards to reduce the variables at play. I'm thinking that the tablet's probably got a bare aerial in it because it's a larger device and that helps with the speeds. But I also saw extreme variations on both devices when just moving a few kilometres one way or the other, even when I was well within the LTE coverage area. Because you get the same fluctuations with HSDPA as well, which offers speeds up to about 20 megabits per second with the introduction of dual cell HSDPA or DC HSDPA. I can still tell you after spending some time around the suburbs that anyone who thinks these wireless technologies can seriously take the place of the NBN needs to spend a little bit more time roaming the suburbs with smartphones. They're great for filling the gaps, but you couldn't ditch fibre and run an entire city off this stuff. To cut to the chase, using the speedtest.net Android app, the best result I got from the Samsung tablet was a scorching 55 megabits per second down, 14 megabits per second up, with a ping time of 47 milliseconds. That's phenomenal. That's the kind of speed most people would kill for on their home fixed line connection, let alone their wireless connection. That low latency is also very impressive for a wireless network. But like I said, the performance was not consistent. That was in the late evening when only a few people would have been using the LTE network. It's actually not inconceivable that mine was the only active LTE device in the area. Earlier in the same day, only a few streets away, I could only get 15 megabits up and down. And as the speed drops, the latency goes up, and I often saw that my ping times were coming in at well over 100 milliseconds. Most of the time, I could only squeeze about two-thirds speed out of the HTC phone that I could out of the Samsung tablet. Like I said, there's a lot of variation, and you take these whole network speed things with a grain of salt. What I found really interesting that was once I got outside the LTE footprint, the tablet and the phone still pulled down around 12 megabits per second because they were using DC HSDPA. This is pretty good. Now, I didn't have an iPad 3 on me, but that also has DC HSDPA, and I've heard of it pulling down 19 megabits per second on Telstra. My poor old HSDPA-compatible iPhone 4 was struggling to hit 1 megabits per second, even though I was squeezing a lot more out of it when I first got it a couple of years ago. It seems that the Telstra network has just been flooded by all these refugees from Vodafone and Optus. I had a friend's iPhone 4S, which says HSPA+, and it was only getting 3 megabits per second. There was a time when you happily paid more for Telstra because the performance was that much better than the competitors, but Telstra is at a real risk of losing that advantage if it doesn't do something soon. And I know that they're hoping the move to LTE will take some of the load off HSDPA, but with such a small footprint and so few devices on the market, I think it's going to take a while before we actually see the impact of that. The other question that I would ask, and it sounds like sacrilege, but what difference does that extra speed actually make? If you're getting decent DC HSDPA speeds, then the jump to LTE isn't going to be striking during day-to-day use. The Samsung Galaxy tablet didn't load complicated web pages any faster when it was sucking down 55 megabits per second because the bottleneck was not the data link, but the speed at which the tablet can render pages. iView clips didn't start playing any faster, large files didn't upload to Dropbox any faster, because again, the bottleneck is how fast these services can send and receive data, not the actual data link. It's not to say that LTE is a dud and that we don't need it, but it's going to take time for the infrastructure to be able to take advantage of this speed. If you're regularly shifting around hefty files, then you'll come across some mobile-friendly services which can take full advantage of LTE, and more will come over time. You're also obviously going to enjoy the speed boost if you're tethering your LTE device to your notebook. But if you're just browsing the web, checking the mail, uploading photos, streaming music, video, doing those other ordinary things, then LTE's performance boost over DC HSDPA isn't really going to strike you. LTE might be the latest and greatest, but if you're getting 10 megabits per second or more out of a non-LTE device, then I wouldn't be too envious of the LTE early adopters. It's the way of the future, but there's no need to rush in. I don't think iPad 3 owners should be all that upset if they're managing to get 19 megabits per second out of DC HSDPA. But if you're only managing to squeeze a few precious megabits per second out of an older device, you'll certainly want to look for LTE and or DC HSDPA compatibility when it's time to upgrade to your next gadget.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, Adam. And Adam's view from the couches can be downloaded and listened to again on the Tech Talk Radio website, techtalkradio.com.au. Just follow the nose to the view from the couch and they're all there. You can hear that one right now if you go there and you want to hear what he said and compare notes. The
wise words there from Adam, I think.
The dual cell stuff's brilliant.
Making a lot of sense. You were saying you've got a 3G, 3G to Wi-Fi, like, little portable hotspot device.
I do.
And it makes two 3G connections at once to the network.
Does. And when you're in a fairly good area for mobile coverage, the speeds down on that thing are just absolutely amazing. You get, you know, 20 to, or probably 12 to 20 on average megabits per second down, which is just great on a mobile device.
Can I read something that Stryker put in the chat?
Oh, yes.
Stryker said, our brackets Australia's Telstra 3G network came second in the world for all tests, well above every 4G network except one in the USA.
Oh, which one? So in the USA? Doesn't say.
There's not many to choose from for 4G networks. So, I think that this is one of the points that Apple's lawyers made when they were defending themselves for selling the 4G device in Australia, was that by many tests, although Telstra call it a 3G network, it's as fast as a 4G network anyway. when it's running well, the current Telstra 3G network, the next G network. So this is, and then this feeds into what Adam's saying, that the performance difference between next G running well and LTE running well is not going to be that noticeable on current devices.
And Adam's advice is not to race out and
not to
buy
rush into it, no.
Anything if you don't need to, because the 3G stuff's obviously going to be around for some time and probably do you or serve you quite well. But if you're using one of the older technologies, then why not bypass the 3G stuff, go to LTE, because it'll always fall back to the old
3G. If you're buying a new device,
future-proof yourself for a couple of years.
If you're going to buy a new device, then of course you'd want to have the new standards, because that's where the long term is going to be. But the advice not to rush into it seems to be sound. If you're currently got devices that are working reasonably well on Telstra's next G network. If your current device is on a slower network, or it hasn't got all the right bands in, or it's an older device, then yeah, it's probably a good reason to upgrade.
Vodafone have got they're trying to woo customers back in on their network. I'm just trying to find. During the course of the week, they came out with, and I wish I could find it now, they changed their prices on their mobile phone plans so that trying to give everyone, here we go, their mobile broadband quotas have given a bit more. Virgin Mobile has increased the data quota on its postpaid mobile broadbands by between 500 meg and 4 gig a month. The carrier also dropped its $49 a month plan, which came with 12 gig of quota. Sorry, this is Virgin, I beg your pardon, not Vodafone. and Virgin's entry level stays $19 a month with USB to 26. Yeah, my point was, sorry, I thought it was Vodafone, but obviously didn't read it right. But the Vodafone issue is the fact that a lot of people have jumped ship off that network and moved across to Telstra, and we're starting to see a lot of congestion, also from Optus and other things like that. So I'm just also curious whether Virgin is a resold product of one of the main telcos. It'd be interesting to see which one it is. So, but yeah, it's going to be a very competitive space in the not too distant future. But and also another point that Adam made, which is very worthwhile to re-mention too, was the fact that you're not going to replace fixed line with mobile data. That's why we need the NBN.
That's right. Yes,
we definitely need all of that sort of stuff too. I was going to do a quick test in the studio. Actually, I'm connected to a Telstra HTC device at the moment on one of my devices, just to see what the speed is. Sitting in the middle of suburban Melbourne in a radio studio, and just connecting through my HTC Desire, I'm getting just under 4.5 meg down sitting here, which is not bad, not shabby. And I'll try I've got the other one here. I brought in for show and tell before. It's just got a bit of a flat battery, so I'll try it after the next break or something like that, and we'll see how that one compares. So,
according to my quick search, and I hope this is right, Virgin Mobile in Australia uses Optus, so they're reselling Optus network.
Are they? Okay. That's an oversold network traditionally anyway, that one.
For data anyway.
Everybody uses that one, because I don't think Telstra resell much on their mobile broadband. Oh, well, they definitely don't sell on their next G, not unless something's happened in the last little day or so. But, they might do it, because I think they paired up with Hutchison's there for a while. On other stories this week, what would you say if you went to a hotel and you used their Wi-Fi, and albeit a free Wi-Fi?
Yep.
But what would you think if the hotel altered web pages that were being served to you?
I wouldn't pay for it.
But it was free.
It's free.
Oh, it's free. Okay.
And you probably had to agree to the terms and conditions to get through.
Yeah. But
to be allowed to use it.
What would you say if they actually pull websites apart, insert ads, and then send them on to you? So there are ads in web server, because it's on your free Wi-Fi. It's like going to the Tech Talk page, and they see, oh, okay, the Tech Talk page is 1,000 pixels wide. Let's rip that apart, stick a 1,000-pixel ad in there, and give them the menu underneath that. That's a bit rude, isn't it? What do you reckon?
It's a bit rude, but, yeah, I just wouldn't bother using it. I don't bother using those. That's why I have my own 3G connections in my devices.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's exactly right. You take your mobile hotspot for that. This is becoming...
I think you tweeted about this and you asked, should they do it?
Yeah.
And my answer is, well, they shouldn't do it in the same way that you shouldn't sell a 40-cent packet of peanuts for $1.20, but...
You been to the movies lately? Yeah.
There's nothing... inherently, it's not illegal. It's not necessarily. I mean, if they do harm by doing it, if they're selling ads and the ads turn out to have viruses in, then they should be held liable for it.
Well, it'll be served off a ad server somewhere, and presumably, I'm sure it won't be on site. So
yeah, so I mean, if I got a virus through something like that, I'd go back and I'd hold the hotel responsible for it. But other than that, I mean, it's not nice behaviour, but it's no worse than anything else that's likely to be done to you in a hotel.
Mm. Yes, because they do tend to charge for Wi-Fi, especially in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, stayed in a hotel in Australia?
Not for a while. Really?
No, they'll charge you for their Wi-Fi. They'll charge you for their blue cable connection in the room.
Take your mobile broadband. Probably cheaper getting.
They'll charge you $1.20 for a local phone call.
I stayed in.
So they still do that.
Yeah, but no one bothers because everyone uses their mobile these days.
Yeah, correct.
I stayed in two hotels in Bali last year. And, the year before last year now. One much more expensive than the other.
Yes.
And the first one had Wi-Fi yet to pay for, and that was quite expensive. It was probably about $20 for less than a gig, it would have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, less than a gig. But at the more expensive hotel.
That's like Telstra roaming prices when you go overseas with a,
At the more expensive hotel, it was free.
Oh, okay. Well,
and no ads or anything.
That doesn't follow here. Even at the expensive hotels in Australia, you're still just as likely to get charged for using their Wi-Fi.
Mm. Strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it is. And I went when I was in the United States recently, I remember getting the laptop out because I had a bit of time to kill at Las Vegas, McCarran Airport, which is in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And that's all free Wi-Fi around that particular airport. And in San Fran too, at the San Francisco airport, that's all free.
Yeah, you've always got to think about who you're trusting with free Wi-Fi. Because I mean, a free Wi-Fi connection only connects you to. I mean, a Wi-Fi connection isn't the same as an internet connection. You're only connecting to their. You know, if you're connecting to the San Francisco airport's Wi-Fi, you're connecting to the San Francisco airport's internet internal network. And if you go through there to the Wi-Fi. I'm not explaining this well. But if you go through there to the internet, then they can do things in between. They're in between you and the internet.
Okay.
So you've always got to be aware. And what if I wanted to collect people's email passwords, for example, what I would do is I would go and sit at somewhere where there's free Wi-Fi. I'd set up my own Wi-Fi connection with the same name as the free one, let people connect to me thinking they're connecting to the free one.
And
capture their passwords on the way through. Yeah.
Yes, definitely good reason to trust gadgets that you take. I was just looking at what Thailand Tommy has put in our chat. Hello, Thailand Tommy. I'm guessing, as the name suggests, you're in Thailand. He also says, don't you hate it when it scrolls off just like that? Everyone stop typing there for a moment. This is a major issue in Southeast Asian hotels. The Wi-Fi is poorly designed, and now with all the new gadgets, they can't even surf. I think that's supposed to be serve you with good Wi-Fi. And then also he said down the bottom, for instance, a major airline in Singapore renews its lease and drops you off every 3 minutes. Oh, it scrolls again. As they can't handle the traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can certainly relate to that, the demand for that sort of stuff.
Yeah. The other thing that they do is that their connection, sometimes they say free Wi-Fi, but... And people assume that means a free internet connection, but what you actually get is a free web browsing connection, but you can't make other types of
internet connections.
Yeah, you, that's right. You only get web browsing. You don't get, for example, customers who want to connect to their corporate networks to get their corporate email through a VPN can't do it because it only allows port 80.
Mm. That was something I noticed when we were in Bali. It used to be happy hour. We used to be written on all the blackboards out the front of the bars and stuff to get people to come in. And when I was there, it was free Wi-Fi.
Was that a replaced happy hour?
Yeah, replaced happy hour to get people into these places.
The other trick for people, by the way, is quite often with these free or even the charged Wi-Fi connections, or could be cable connection in a hotel where you plug the blue cable into your network socket.
Yep.
Quite often, you have to agree to their terms and conditions before you can proceed through the connection. So, I've found a lot of people trying to do corporate connections. So, they travel, they drop in a hotel. The first thing they want to do is connect the VPN to their office to get their office email.
Yeah.
And they find it doesn't work. And the trick is to open a web page first. It'll, instead of coming up with the web page you expect, it'll come up with the hotel's terms and conditions.
Yep. Mm.
You tick the box, say I agree, click I agree. And bring up google.com or something like that,
yep.
Then connect your VPN and you'll find it'll suddenly work. It just doesn't connect to the internet until you've been to a web page first to agree to their terms and conditions. Tip. That's a trap for a lot of people.
Warlock says in the chat, that's why you can never connect to the Free Sydney Airport Wi-Fi. I've never tried
that's
in
why
Sydney.
That's why he never connects. He's saying the fact that somebody else could set up the same name and intercept the traffic,
What are the ferry terminals like? Because I know up at on the ferry, the Manly Ferry, and the ones that go across to Taronga on Sydney Harbour these days, they have free Wi-Fi on them. I wonder if Warlock's had a chance to play with that. The other thing,
he probably wouldn't trust them for that same reason,
The other thing, too, when I was recently in the United States, I tried out the free Wi-Fi on Virgin. Virgin America run free Wi-Fi on their flights between sort of short-haul areas, like between San Fran and Vegas. And it's something like $7 a month. Is what if you're a frequent flyer, you can just pay your $7. It makes sense. If you're traveling to a destination coming back, just pay the $7. Otherwise,
$7 would be worth it. One flight, as you're saying.
And the great thing about that is you can actually use your mobile device or your laptop or your netbook or whatever it is like that at 35,000 feet. And it's great. You can tweet from up there of great aerial shots out of aircraft and things like that as you're flying through. But I did notice the lag was a bit average. Like, you can't do a Skype call on it or anything like that. It's just not, it just doesn't work. But, and if you do a, if you look back on, say, where the Wi-Fi is coming from, it all comes out of Los Angeles Airport. So, despite the fact that you are sort of anywhere in airspace in the US, if anyone looks up and say, where's the signal coming from? It's coming from Los Angeles Airport. So, good uses of Wi-Fi, but from hotels and traveling and all sorts of things like that. So, interested to hear your Wi-Fi experiences, because internet traveling abroad is normally either very expensive if you're roaming or very expensive if you're plugging into the hotel wireless stuff too. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron not in, Graham's in, Lena's in. We're here. So we'll continue on. We're going to have games thing very shortly, aren't we? Got some good juicy news for us.
I do.
That's good. Before we go to the break, parking inspectors are going to use closed circuit TV to book drivers. Did you hear about this? They're not going to pound the pavement anymore. They're just going to lock off on the cameras in the street and the smarts in the gear now.
This seems to be a low-tech approach compared to the last story we ran about this.
Where they run things in the pavement.
The same sort of technology that detects whether there's a car stopped at the lights waiting for a red light. They were having those sorts of loops under the car parking spots to detect whether a car had been there for longer than the required time. And then they send a text message or something to the parking inspector to head to that spot that's been occupied for too long. That's a much higher tech solution than this.
They do that in New Zealand a lot. They call them landmines.
Okay, because I was in, as you would.
They're little domes that just sit on the parking spot.
Oh, right, because in Melbourne, I've been to a few places, and you see the little yellow signs up on the new, parking sites, and it says new technology has been installed in this area to detect parking. And you look around, you go, what have they done? There's nothing dug up or anything like that. So
it's probably
a bluff.
It could be a loop underneath the parking spot in the.
Yeah, but they haven't dug it up. It's an old sort of area.
No, you don't have to dig it. You cut it with a saw. You put it in and then you patch it.
Yeah, like they do at the traffic lights. I haven't seen any instances of that underneath there. But anyway, maybe there's a bit of bluff going on here just to scare the willy into people who don't know any better to make sure they don't extend their meters. Anyway, an example in Ipswich in southeast Queensland, the council's issued more than 150 tickets in a fortnight using these closed circuit TV cameras in their local precinct. So I don't think they'd send people out, but maybe they do. But anyway, if you're parking in certain areas now, you've got to watch out for that. Also, in Victoria, have you noticed that the registration stickers that you put on your car has now got really big rego on your sticker?
They have for a couple of years now, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. There's a rumour in it that it's for photographic reasons.
Okay.
One particular person has told me that it's for petrol drive-offs.
Oh, okay.
So that you can see, because people hide their registration plates or change them or do whatever they do.
They forget to change the rego sticker.
Yeah. And they forget the rego sticker, which has got the real, ABC, XYZ on it and obviously can be looked up. But they've made those rego stickers bigger for that.
I'm surprised that the security cameras at the service station are high res enough, even with the big letters, to read it. But perhaps they are these days with digital cameras and digital storage instead of storing them on VHS tape.
Well, yeah that too. Also, when you think of the tollways that are now popping up around the countryside.
That was my first thought when you mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, they probably use them there as well.
Maybe they just do that thing, you know, on CSI where they click enhance and they press the button and it zooms in and then they can read it.
Excuse me, listeners, while I whack Lena on the back of the head.
Have another Easter egg.
I can't. I have to talk soon.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so anyway, the parking meter by camera these days. Boring. All sorts of things. Yeah. It's all going to happen. Nah.
There's much higher tech solutions than that.
Have you seen some of the new parking meters that now take Visa and MasterCard and all those sort of things?
Have you used those yet? Cash.
No, ever. I don't either. And there's places out there, once you start getting used to those new parking meters, you go to a place where they haven't got it and you go, oh, damn. And the number of times I've gone out to have a bite to eat with someone and you go into the restaurant and say, hi, can I have $5 in coins and I come back and eat here? They go, oh, yeah, all right.
I haven't seen those parking meters. But do they take PayWave? Do you just do your contactless payment with it, with the PayWave? That would be ideal.
I've got a chip in my card and I shove it into the machine. It won't do PayWave. I'll look up closer next time.
I mean, my big question is, why don't the trams do this? I got on a tram a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, who aren't familiar with those, they're big green things in Melbourne that slow traffic.
Yeah, I had to go about three or four stops only and then get on another tram going at right angles on a different road. And so I wanted to buy my daily, zone 1 and 2 ticket for me and for the person I was travelling with.
Mm-hmm.
I had to put in nearly $20 of coins.
Mm.
And I had to put them, and I just barely got the second ticket, and I pulled the ticket out of the machine as we ran off the tram.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous, absolutely outrageous. couldn't pay by notes, couldn't pay by card.
Really?
Ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, coin only. Those PayPass things, we've talked about them quite often, but I can't remember. Do you have to request one, or if your credit card expires soon, hypothetically, just say mine does, and I get a new one sent out to me, is it going to have that on it automatically, or do I have to request it?
I think generally you'll get it with your renewals, but I would ring the financial institution because,
I'm excited about
my one. I rang the bank to find out if I was going to get it, and they said yes, everybody gets them automatically from my bank.
Is that your card there? That's my card there.
You are that bank?
I'm that bank.
Well, then, yeah, you'll be right. But I didn't get one on that one, which is a business account with the same bank. So I haven't quite figured that out yet. And I didn't get one on that one, which is a different provider. So, yeah.
I'll call and ask.
Your mileage may vary. I would call and ask, yeah.
Okay, cool.
ZDNet recently had an article saying that over 600,000 Macs were infected with a flashback Trojan. A Trojan being something that just lives in stealth on your machine?
A Trojan is something that you get which claims to be one thing but turns out to be another.
Yeah?
But doesn't it
stealthily live on your machine?
Well, after it does, yes, but it's not what a Trojan is. A Trojan is something that you, say you download, let's pick a completely and utterly random example, you download the latest Flash installer because Flash doesn't come on your Mac anymore. And you download it from the wrong site, from a disreputable site, and it installs, and it instead of installing Flash, as well as installing Flash, it installs the malware, the bad software as well.
Yeah.
And this is what's happened to several thousand Mac users?
Yeah, well, 600,000, but it's related to Java, because it's exploiting a hole in Java, but Java's used on a lot of other things. Why would it just pick on a Mac?
Well, two reasons. The Mac was the easy target, because this is exactly what they did. The Macs didn't stop coming with Flash pre-installed, so the users had to go and download Flash and install it themselves. So they embedded it in a fake Flash installer that looked very legitimate, by the way. Looked exactly like the real Flash installer. And they used a hole in the Java client to install itself. And again, this is a product of being Macs and living in Mac world where they don't have to worry about anything in security or any of that sort of stuff. Instead of Macs doing like PCs do, you get your Java client from Sun Java and it keeps itself up to date directly with the providers of Java. The Java client on the Mac is updated by Apple.
Not by Java.
So the updates go, so Sun release a new version of Java to fix some problems.
Yeah.
Then the Apple people take it and they repackage it for Mac users, and Mac users get the update. In this case, it was some weeks later.
Yep.
And they exploited the delay in that fix being provided to Mac users to get past the security.
And that's the reason why Apple has since patched the Java, but that was only a couple of days ago. And as of then, there were more than 600,000 Macs infected by the Flashpack Trojan, which steals your usernames and passwords to popular websites by monitoring your network traffic.
Yeah, now this particular Trojan, it's over time, it's developed and it's used a lot of different methods to infect, according to the Times. So, a particular vulnerability is found or a particular vulnerability is plugged, they'll go and find a new vulnerability to use to install it. It's been one of these ones that's evolved quite a bit over time. But the end result is that a lot of Macs have been infected and a lot of Mac users don't know they're infected.
Yes, and there's also a growing botnet of Mac controls or Mac client computers, I guess, so that
when all out there harvesting this information and sending it back to the bad guys.
Yeah, when the bad guys like Anonymous decide to do a DDoS attack of the homeland in the UK, then chances are they're recruiting some Mac machines, which people aren't aware that that's what they're doing, and they're putting in all their requests to these particular organisations.
That's another possibility, yes.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It must be time for this.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Yay! That's me.
What's happening in the gaming world? I've been playing games today.
Good job.
Cold, not quite wet. Oh, there was a bit of wet, but it was time to get out, as I said earlier in the show.
You're doing your bit for my favourite art form. Well done.
That was good. I enjoyed it, actually. I hadn't done it for ages.
Oh, good. I hope you have many more gaming days to come.
Yeah.
Double Fine, I've talked about them a few times over the last few weeks because they had that amazing crowdfunding explosion on Kickstarter where they made $3 million for their game and they only pledged $400,000.
Oh, yeah. What did they do with the leftovers?
They're going to make a documentary running alongside the development of it, which should
that's good.
Suck up the rest of that money pretty easily, I'd say. Documentaries are not cheap. Now, the good thing about this is a lot of people were saying because they were such a large brand that they really didn't need something like that to help them out, that they could probably find source funding in other ways and that they may be damaging other businesses' chances and other indies in particular's chances at getting funded. Now, that's been proved to be completely false by Forbes and the Kickstarter company themselves, who've posted on the company's blog that the success of the Double Fine adventure is spilling over into other crowdfunded video game projects.
Yep.
In the month leading up to Double Fine's debut, the video games category averaged 629 pledges per week, which is still pretty
that's
good.
A lot.
But it gets better. A shocking jump in pledges occurred after the game's enormous success. Not counting additional pledges for Double Fine, the number skyrocketed to 9,755 pledges per week.
Wow.
Other notable projects included the success of after the success of Double Fine, Wasteland 2 and indie RPG The Banner Saga. All told, the video game category has netted $2.9 million in the month and a half following the success of Double Fine's Kickstarter program. Now, that is amazing, and that's not taking anything away from the other people who are trying to get funding this way. This is actually helping them. So
that's right, because people don't find the video game project through the funding site.
Not necessarily,
they find the funding site through the video game project.
Exactly.
So,
and people, the news coverage it gets and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so people go and they contribute to the game and then they realise where they are and they think, oh, wow, there's these other cool things I can contribute to as well.
Yeah, according to Kickstarter, Double Fine is the largest project they've ever had and it brought 60,000 new backers or first-time pledges for a total of over 87,000 for that project. And 22% of these first-time backers.
So the vast majority are people who've never been there before.
Exactly, yeah. And they've said 22% of these first-time backers have decided to back another project.
That's so it's a great win-win, as you say. That's
really
fantastic.
So that's really good. So anyone who is worried about them taking money off other people, you can chill. It's really good for everyone.
And more power to Kickstart's arm. I think that's a fantastic
It's great.
System.
And the more money they get, hopefully the more they can open up an Australian version, which would be great. we do have Possible over here, which is pretty much the same thing, which is great. And there are a few.
Can Australians use Kickstart though?
Yes, we can back things.
But can Australian projects request backing through it? No, they can't.
No.
US only, is it?
Yep. US only, I think. Or maybe US and Canada, North America only or something like that. But not us, that's all I know.
Oh, well, that's something. Perhaps we should have a Kickstarter project to kickstart Australian Kickstart.
But we can't.
It's called a mining tax, isn't it?
Sorry. Speaking of mining, the Minecraft creator, Mojang, and in particular Marcus Notch Person, have revealed a new game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, according to GameSpot.
What are we doing now?
he's launched a website, 0x10¢, or 0x10¢. It's probably not supposed to be 10 cents, but that's what I read it as.
Could be degrees Celsius or something.
Could be anything.
It's a bit like that outside.
I don't know how to read it. Has stated that the new project will be a space-oriented title. Like with Minecraft, he expects it, the release of the game to be early on to let players shape the game as it grows. Now, that's Minecraft was released still in alpha. So you have your alpha release, then your beta release, and then your actual proper full release, which is known as going gold.
And sounds like Penny and Leonard's relationship on the Big Bang Theory. They're in a beta version.
Something like that, yeah. So that's actually something that that person really, really liked and really enjoyed, was letting players shape the game as it grows, sort of help get people's help and ideas to make a better game all round. The game will be set in a parallel universe where space travel is normal for corporations and the rich, and the incorrect development of a deep sleep cell has rendered a number of the population asleep for longer than intended. Waking up in the future, the deep sleepers find a universe on the brink of extinction.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. According to the developer, the game will include space battles against AI and other players, as well as mining, trading, and looting. Additionally, the game will
it's
boast...
got everything, hasn't
it? It'll boast an advanced economy system, single and multiplayer modes connected via the game's multiverse. At the moment, the cost of the game is still undecided, but Person says there's likely to be a monthly fee for joining the game's multiverse. That's because they want everything to be continuing when people aren't even logged in. And there's no release date yet on that one.
Okay.
But it sounds very exciting.
Cool.
Batman Arkham City looks like they're adding a Harley Quinn DLC. Now, Batman fans will be very aware of who Harley Quinn is. She's got a lot of fans. She's a little bit crazy. Everyone has a bit of a soft spot for Harley Quinn, especially Kevin Smith. Downloadable content looks like it's coming for Harley Quinn, because PS3trophies.org has updated a trophy listing that has a number of trophies are achievements that you can earn on PlayStation. And there's 10.
You see that in the menu at the end, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
I've often wondered what that's for.
Yeah, it's your little achievements that you earn along the way.
Okay. Dr. Ron traditionally tweets those.
Yes, he would.
Yeah, he does.
well, you're proud of them when you win a trophy. Yeah. So there's been a list of trophies that you can unlock in the game that have indicated that Harley Quinn might be involved. EA has been named the worst company in America.
Oh, do tell
by,
why?
By a consumerist vote tally.
Okay, so this is by the masses.
Magazine. This is a masses vote, masses so therefore vote. It means nothing. Mass Effect, FIFA, and The Sims publisher Electronic Arts are the worst company in the United States.
But do they say why?
According to the results of a more than 250,000 votes on consumer affairs blog The Consumerist. EA knocked out Bank of America in the final round to secure the title, winning the site's Golden Poo Award.
Oh. That reminds me, of the Gruen transfer. They used to have a steaming one, didn't they? For their, one of their awards, yeah.
They did. I think this is probably in retaliation to the Mass Effect 3 hoo-ha, brouhaha, as some may say. To reach the final round of the Consumerist Worst Company in America Challenge, EA beat out Best Buy, Sony, AT&T, and Comcast, while Bank of America took down Citibank, Ticketmaster, Walmart, and Chase.
So this was an online survey at a consumer affairs website.
Yes.
So what this really means is that in sheer numbers, they've pissed off more tech-savvy consumers than any other company.
Pretty much.
That's really what it means.
And that gamers really know how to rally the troops.
Well, they
which we really do. And we know what to do with them once we have rallied them.
It's pretty easy these days
games
with Twitter.
Teach us. In a statement provided to GameSpot, the EA Senior Director of Corporate Communications, John Riesberg, said in response, "We're sure that bank presidents, oil, tobacco, and weapons companies are all relieved they weren't on the list this year. We're going to continue making award-winning games and services played by more than 300 million people worldwide." I think he's not losing any sleep, in short. He also mentioned that BioWare made it into the final round of a Best Developer competition held by The Escapist recently, and brought up the fact that EA Sports is running user-voted contests for NCAA Football 13, NHL 13, and Madden NFL 13. He said 23 million votes have been cast for the three games. In short, nah, we're not the worst. Right. So he's having votes for EA being a great company by 23 million people. This consumerist vote was 250,000. I don't think he's upset. and an interesting one I came across today, which was a pretty scary headline to catch Careful when ditching that old Xbox. It could still have your credit card info.
Oh, yes.
Ouch. Information security researcher Ashley Podraski, I'm probably really not pronouncing that right, I apologize, Ashley, has found that even restoring the Xbox to its original factory settings doesn't completely wipe the slate clean.
Oh.
In an interview with gaming blog Kotaku, the Dakota State PhD and Drexel professor said, Microsoft does a great job of protecting their proprietary information, but they don't do a great job of protecting the user's data.
Good.
Ouch.
Stop that.
Last year, Podraski and three fellow researchers bought a used Xbox from a Microsoft-approved retailer. Ooh. With little work, they were able to extract certain files and, yes, the previous owner's credit card numbers. Ouch. Podraski continued to say that an experienced console hacker wouldn't even take that much time as the researchers did to get the data. A lot of them already know how to do this, she told Kotaku. Anyone can freely download a lot of this software, essentially pick up a discarded game console and have someone's identity. If you're thinking about selling or donating your Xbox, be sure to do some sort of hard drive sanitation software on it first. The Dakota State research team particularly recommends Derek's Boot and Nuke, which can be used if you detach your Xbox hard drive and hook it up to your PC. Or
that's a good idea. Yep.
Rip the hard drive out, smash it up, and sell the case.
Yeah.
Without a hard drive,
a hard drive in it.
Yeah.
It's worth a shot. It really is.
Just a quick question. Just swapping hard drives out in game consoles, is that an easy thing or is it all
proprietary? It's an expensive thing to do, especially with Xboxes.
Oh, is it?
An Xbox hard drive will set you back hundreds of dollars.
Really?
Yes.
It's not your average pop down the local computer store and buy your own IDE or
definitely
SATA drive?
Not.
No?
Okay. Definitely not. No, they're very, very expensive. And they're only about 150 gig, 250 gig.
Really?
Can I comment on credit card security?
Absolutely.
I said we don't have a lot of time, but be brief.
I did say this once before on the show. Beware of companies, any company, this is Xbox, Sony, or anything else, where you're giving your credit card number, where it stores it and remembers it for next time. That's always a danger flag for me. I would rather that the Xbox or the, whatever it is that you're using asks for your credit card again next time rather than stores it and keeps it, because there's no need for them to store it and keep it. And that's just a big security flag. It means that there's a possibility that where they've stored it could get compromised.
I think in Australia they're not allowed to, so it must be off overseas where they're doing this, because I think
maybe.
Some of the terms and conditions I've seen as a merchant over the course of time, you're not allowed to store.
Not allowed to store customers' credit cards. You've got to ask them for it each time. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
and the workaround for this, by the way, for consumers is to go and get the get a special low limit credit card that you only use for these things. Or use the, buy them down the supermarket, buy a $100 credit card.
Warlock in our chat says, Visa and MasterCard will refund you any stolen money. I don't care so much. And above that, he says, Andrew, we don't have much time. Lol. Does that mean I can push this button now, please, Graham?
Please.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
Philips' new ErgoSensor desktop display demands that you sit up straight. Now, I'm struggling to read this,
Don't slouch, Graham. Sit up.
Yeah, apparently Philips have come up with a new screen that warns you when you're not sitting in the correct posture.
You've got to sit properly.
I'm having
properly.
Real trouble reading this copy, Andrew. I'm sorry.
Put the glasses on. Oh, dear.
That doesn't require you wear a silly plastic pendant or anything like that, or plug into the USB. The 24-inch display has a sensor in its bezel that watches you while you work and warns you when your posture becomes poor.
Sit up, Graham. Come
on. Or if you've been
Thank
staring
you,
at the... Andrew,
yes.
Would you allow me to read, please?
Yeah, sorry.
Or if you've been staring at the screen too long. It also informs users how to set up the monitor for optimal viewing distance and ergonomic position. So there you go. Nothing to plug in, nothing odd to wear, just all built into a sensor that looks at you from the screen to, keep you sitting straight and save you from hurting your back or for sitting too long staring at the screen. So good one, Philips. That's an interesting one.
Excellent. That's our gadget. Gadget of the week.
Philips Ergo Sensor Display.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
During the course of the week, I threw out a tweet saying to our listeners to come back with a website of the week, and Michael Fields did, and it was one which I hadn't thought of, which is a very funny website. It's very flippant because it is that time of the year. It's a holiday sort of show, and it's willitblend.com. I think we've all been there before.
Yes.
It's one of those great things with the man with the blender, and he blends iPhones, iPads, any form of technological gadget or non-technological gadget, which is just a bit of a funny one, I thought. So, yeah, it was a good suggestion there from one of our listeners, Michael Fields, with the funny, not quite so serious website of the week, which is called Will It Blend.
It's a great site. They've got two categories. They've got the try this at home category and the don't try this at home category.
The big red box.
And I'll give you one clue which one's the really fun one.
Yeah, the ones with the red tick, red cross. Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michael. You can send them through if you've got a favourite one to the radio show, and we'll try and read them out. But that's our website of the week, which is willitblend.com. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Here's a new one that came out during the course of the week. The Vodafone PR department were working quite well. They've got an app now for an Android phone, which works on all networks. And it's an app that helps Aussie families agree to boundaries for mobile phone use for young people. So what happens is you can actually set up the phone for certain numbers. So you can give a young person in the household a mobile phone. Set it up for certain numbers and certain times that you can do it with a special override code which unlocks the phone so that it does what it would do normally. The only difference between, you think, oh, yeah, but the kids can just undo it and go on to other things. In this case, they can't. Well, they can, but what it does, it also notifies mum and dad at home that the override code has been used. So I thought that was quite a good app for young people. Works on Android, works on all carriers. And it just lets mums and dads introduce mobile phones into the lives of children and those who need it maybe a tad earlier than they would otherwise. So check it out on the Android site. It's also on our website. You can go there, find the link. And,
search for it in the market.
Thank you, Vodafone, for an app such as that.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bond. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Poor mobile phone network dashes prisoner bracelet plan. The Northern Territory's Correctional Services says it cannot use electronic tracking bracelets on criminals because the phone network is not up to scratch.
Is that why Dr. Ron was up in the Northern Territory?
The department wanted to allow some inmates to serve their sentences in the community, but the tracking bracelets require a landline or strong mobile phone signal to operate. In some remote communities, we don't have the opportunity to have landlines in some of the offenders' residences, says the Territory's Executive Director of Corrections, Ken Middlebrook. I want to make sure that before we go too far down that track, that we're really confident and really certain that the technology we're buying is really going to do the job for us. And fair enough.
Really? There's a lot of reallys in that statement.
Really, really, really want to be sure.
And guess what? That's really it. We've run out of time. That's Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Who knows what will happen between now and then, but Dr. Ron will be back in next week.
Yay!
Allegedly. So it'd be good to have him back on the panel, yeah. Other than from a phone call in Darwin. He'll be obviously been used to being on trains. He'll be a bit rickety-rackety, I guess. Anyway, that's it for this week. You know where to contact us. We love hearing from you. So until the same time next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws, and may not be rebroadcast without approval.